welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 262 of the podcast. And it is the 25th of March, 2016, as I record this. And today I have an interview with Mark Lefebvre from Kobo. And we talk about some of the current exciting things in global self-publishing, as well as how to sell more books on Kobo. And I'm recording this a little bit early because I'm flying to Austin, Texas on Easter Sunday morning. And I will actually be seeing Mark next week, as well as loads of other indies and indie service providers at the Smarter Artist Summit. I'll also be meeting some people in person that I've never met before, like Lindsay Barocca, who's been on the show and I've been a kind of online friend with for years, and also Johnny, Sean and Dave from the self-publishing podcast, and even some of the listeners to the show I'll be meeting. So it will be great to hang out in person after kind of knowing everyone online for years. And what is strange, and of course I've been listening to these shows and I feel like I know all these people. And I know that for you guys listening, that you feel the same way about me. It's like, you know me quite well. You actually know a side of me very well that my own family doesn't know. You know, our own families don't generally, aren't generally that interested in what we do as authors. Most of my family don't know what the hell I do for a living or what I do every day, but you guys do. And I kind of update you every week, which is more than I do with with my family. So I know if you meet me in person, it will, you'll feel like you know me and it will be weird. Please say hello, and I will be feeling that weird when I meet everyone next week. So yeah, the online audio video blog space, it's crazy, but hey, you know, we all know a certain side of each other, and it's just me. And I will report back from the trip in 2 weeks' time. And I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun. So on publishing news this week, there's nothing particularly amazing. So I want to direct everyone to the Indie Author Fringe, which is a free online summit at www.indieauthorfringe.com, arranged by the Alliance of Independent Authors. And it is free. I will say again, it will be 24 hours of amazing video and audio content, as well as articles, panels, including Mark Coker on self-publishing trends for 2016, David Gochran on author beware of the book fairs. There's quite a lot of scam or very, very expensive things that he will be talking about. Nick Stevenson on email lists, Jane Friedman on the future of publishing. There are sessions on self-publishing for newbies, Ingram Spark on print books and agent on selling rights, an expert panel on editing. I'm speaking on audio for audiobooks and podcasting, and much more. And there'll be giveaways as part of every session, and it will be super useful. So register for free at indieauthorfringe.com. So a personal update. I've spent some good time on the author mindset book this week, which I'm really pleased about, because with everything else that's going on, it's been neglected for a while. And I've actually been scouring my own diaries and journals for things to share back from the beginning of my own author journey. Certainly looking back at 2006 to 2008, it's really interesting because I definitely start to learn a lot more about writing. And that's when I wrote my first book. And then 2011, when I started with fiction. But as I also read a lot of nonfiction self-help and books on writing and entrepreneurship, I've been taking notes for years on books that I read. So basically how I read nonfiction is I read through it. And if it back then I was still reading print, so I would turn the corners on the pages and then I'd write up the notes later. And now with Kindle, I highlight on the Kindle and then I write up those notes again later. So I'm finding loads of useful quotes, which will go in the book. And I also found an affirmation, or you could call it a goal, that I wrote in early 2013. So around February 2013. And it says, By December 2015, I will be making six figures as an author, and Jonathan, my husband, will be able to leave his job. And so early 2013, I wrote that, and we hit that goal in September 2015 before my deadline. So it just shows you the power of affirmation. And of course, if you don't know my backstory, my affirmation way back in 2006 was, I am creative, I am an author. And look where that took me 10 years later. So if you don't write down goals and affirmations, try starting with that. Or you could wait for the author mindset book and then do it once I kick your ass. Okay, so here's what you've sent me in the last few weeks. Leonard says, I've been looking around for a couple of years in the non-creepy way, the reading your books and loving the podcast way. Thank you, Leonard. That is wonderful. I like lurkers. he says, I'm listening while recovering from the Leipzig book fair. The self-publishing craze has finally gone big in Germany. With indie authors happily coexisting with their traditionally published colleagues, it was quite amazing to watch. That's fantastic. So that's Leipzig in Germany. So that is 2016 that has happened in Germany. I believe that really sort of started to happen in the UK in 2011, 2012. And of course, in America, 2008, 2009. Not sure about the happily coexisting, but certainly the beginning of the self-publishing craze. And this is the thing, it happens at different times in different places as the adoption of digital and ebooks starts to take off, because of course indies make a lot more money with digital and can move a lot faster. So I'll be expecting that type of email from different countries over time. If you feel that self-publishing has taken off in your country, I would love to know. But at the moment, I think Germany is probably ahead. India may well be the next place. Brazil, hopefully, as well. And some other countries over time. I know some French authors who sort of lament the fact that it's unlikely to happen in France for a while. But hey, you know, I think everyone will get there eventually. There were also some great comments about the Ron Vitale podcast. John said particularly, what hit home is that Ron is in the same position of me, or just a couple of years ahead, managing the creative urge as a part-time indie, trying to find the perfect work-life family creative balance. It's encouraging to know that if I can just keep going on, then success is only a matter of time and consistent hard work. It's even more encouraging to know that you were in the same position as both Ron and I, and you have just had more flight time logged. And that is exactly right, John, and everyone who's listening. It's always super amazing to kind of look back and realize how far you can come in a certain amount of time. So 2006, I was, you know, at the beginning of even thinking about writing a book. 2016, I'm, you know, as I am now, multi six-figure income as an author, entrepreneur. And that is amazing. You know, that is a 10-year journey from just the first thoughts to making a really good living doing something I love. So you can achieve a lot. Don't they say you overestimate what you can achieve in a year and you underestimate what you can achieve in 10 years. So very excited. And yes, if you just keep taking steps in the direction that you want, then you will get there. Jimmy McRoberts says, listening to the Introvert podcast and planning my marketing, sent a picture of his notebook with Never Fear on it, which is fantastic. Claudia Chan says, I am making a colouring travel journal. So a super helpful episode with Meg Cowley. And yes, we're continuing to see adult colouring books are continuing to still sell. So if you're thinking of doing an adult colouring book, now's a good time. Erica Lindquist, shoveling lunch into my mouth and listening to the Creative Pen between writing sessions. Trogdor the Purinator is supervising. Lovely picture of Trogdor the ginger cat. And Trogdor is an excellent name. I think that's awesome. Gorgeous cat. Mark Dawson says, listening to the podcast in a car park while Samuel has his afternoon nap. And of course, Mark has his own podcast now, the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. And I listened to the excellent interview with Marie Force this week. She's an eight-figure author. And again, it's kind of funny because when I listen to authors, and I just read something from Bob Mayer actually, and he's on book 70 Marie's on book 50, and it can be hard to think, oh my goodness, when will I get there? But I can tell you, you will speed up. And, you know, I'm coming up on book 19. So, you know, the numbers add up over time. Back to Marie, she was talking about setting up a publishing imprint, and she has employees and she's an 8-figure author. And it's, you know, we're kind of becoming the industry, which is quite weird. And I'm actually going to talk about that a bit more on the next introduction to the next show. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and you'll be hearing much more about Kobo and how to self-publish and market your books on Kobo in the interview today. And if you're already on Kobo, then still have a listen, because we talk about all kinds of updates in the world of indie, including global stuff and Nook and print and a whole load of stuff. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons Vivian, Gigi Winter, Mel Reese, and Matty Dalrymple. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. On Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars, even just $1 a show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month, so less than a coffee a month. And you'll also get an extra monthly Q&A audio. If you are a Patreon supporter, you'll get a link to a page where you can add your questions, and you also get links to all the backlist previous editions of the Q&A shows going back to November, I think. So we're almost coming up to five. And coming up to 6 Q&A shows. So if you can't get enough of my voice, come join us. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get into the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here again with Mark Lefebvre. Hi Mark.
Hey, Joanna, how are you doing?
I'm good. And just in case anyone doesn't know Mark, Mark is the Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations at Kobo, and he also writes horror and dark humor under Mark Leslie. So that's super exciting. And Mark, you've been on the show before, and of course I talk about Kobo a lot, but we want to just start briefly. What is Kobo and what is Kobo Writing Life? So everyone's on the same page before we get into the detail.
Sure. Okay. So Kobo, which is an anagram for book. Kobo is an ebook company that was born in Canada. And it's basically, our focus is bringing readers and writers together. Kobo Writing Life is a platform very much like Kindle Direct Publishing without all that exclusivity jazz. Basically, we are there to make it easier for independent authors and small publishers to publish their work to Kobo's global catalog in 190 countries around the world.
Yeah, and I think as we record this, we've just heard that Nook is closing their UK operations after closing all the other global stores, and is now, I think, US only, or maybe US Canada only. And so for me, it is even more important for authors who don't want to be exclusive to be concentrating on Kobo and iBooks, which are really the other. Isn't it kind of you and iBooks are now fighting for second place in America, but in other countries, like obviously in Canada, Kobo's number one, but in other countries, there is only Kobo, for example.
I'm surprised to see Nook back out of the global market, because we're seeing growth in the global market. It's continuing to expand. So it boggles my mind that they would back out of these very lucrative, very tomorrow markets. As you always say, I'm a big fan of your show, and you have always been ahead of the curve in terms of talking about markets that that haven't exploded yet. So that's kind of startling. But yeah, it's more of a struggle with iBooks' international presence beyond the UK and in other markets. There are certain countries where Kobo may be the most dominant player. So Lots of great global things happening still.
We'll come back to that. So I have picked some things out of the various news reports about Kobo, and I'll link to all that in the show notes so people can read the original. Michael Tamblyn, the CEO of Kobo, was recently in Britain at the Independent Publishers Guild and said, quote, "The industry needs to let go of preconceptions about what the reader is," and talked about the demographic of Kobo readers as silver foxes, with over 50% over 55 years old and 30% retired. Now, I'm fascinated by this. What are your thoughts on this demographic, and, you know, anything else you can tell us about the demographic markets on Kobo?
Oh, sure. I mean, we love our readers. We spend a lot of time paying attention to who they are. And it's kind of interesting when you think about that older demographic, because there's something about that time in their lives where they actually have more time. In some cases, the kids are growing up or grown up, or they're not very young anymore. They have more time for pleasures. And so we're competing with television and movies and things like that for their leisure time, but they have more leisure time. The other thing, as the Kobo Writing Life guy, that really appeals to me about this demographic, and it leads back to what I preach to indie authors repeatedly, is that these customers are not as sensitive to price. Time is of the essence. So what they want is a great read. That is their primary concern. They're not digging through the bargain bins looking for 99-cent novels. They're looking for, entertain me, give me good value. So this is an opportunity for writers, specifically with Kobo, to focus on the quality and making their product the best it can be, making it look the best it can be, even if it is the best it can be. That's where your blurb, that's where your synopsis appeals to that aspect of the customer. And of course, in certain territories, you can talk about higher prices and things like that. The other thing I wanted to comment on, that because I think it's important, is we're starting to share some reading stats on the website as well. So, I mean, just before our call, I was looking at some of your books on Kobo and looking at the reading stats. So the reading time, you've got the London Psychic box set. And so giving, based on reader consumption of the books and based on the word counts, we can estimate for you how long it takes the average person to read the book. So I'm going on an 8-hour flight. Will this box set satisfy me? Yes, the London. You know, if you're going on an overseas flight, you got to pick up the London Psychic box set, because that will fulfill you the whole time. Unless you're a really, really fast reader, then you got to buy the 7-book Arcane. But that's the kind of thing that's really, to me as a reader, I do that all the time. I pick up a book and I wonder, is this going to hold me for the whole flight or for the whole time I'm away? How many books am I going to need? And so we're starting to display those, and we're starting to provide more reading stats as well. So one of the examples for reading stats was like the average Kobo user has enough books in their library that like it'd be like 56 pounds of books if it were paper or something like that. So,
yeah. And I think I like how you guys share your statistics. You know, obviously we don't hear from some companies around their statistics. The other thing I'd say, obviously with the, I mean, a lot of people were saying at the moment, oh, young people only like print, and that means they're going to carry on with print. But I get the feeling that younger people, like, you know, I buy print books for my nieces and my godchildren and all that. And they want print because, one, they don't have a credit card, so they don't have the one click buy, but also they don't, you know, they want to have physical things because they don't own many physical things because their parents own most things. So I think what we'll see, of course, as those young people get older, they'll also move into this demographic anyway. And also with Kindle, like with my mum, she turned, not just Kindle, with Kobo, sorry, with e-readers, with phones, with everything, you can change the font size. And that's a massive thing, isn't it? As people, it's not just older people. I can hardly see.
Yeah, for sure. Well, when you're tired too, right? At the end of the day, you're probably reading on a screen. If you're younger, you're reading on a screen all day anyways. And that's the thing, is, I mean, I've been in the book industry for long enough to remember a time when people would come in looking for large print books, and A, 10% of the books were available in large print, and B, they were $10 to $20 more expensive than the hardcover, even if they were in trade paperback, because, well, they take more paper, and they're harder to produce, they're harder to afford. In digital, every book is a large print, and every book is whatever font you want it to be. You know, Kobo, Kindle, Nook, iBooks, all of the major players have multiple fonts, so you can set your own preferences for how you want to read that book. That's an amazing empowerment for the reader.
Mm. I just remembered one thing. Doesn't Kobo have a waterproof device you can read in the bath?
Oh my God. So the bath, the beach, the bed, anything that starts with B, you can read in it. So it's the, the Kobo Aura H2O, which we launched in Michael Tamblyn in the pool with the synchronized swimmers. It was an absolutely amazing event. And it's great because it's not just, yes, the bath is great, but you take your reader to the beach. It's not just the water you're worried about, it's the sand. But a waterproof device takes care of that. And so that is now my go-to device. I used to have the older version of the Glow, and now I've moved to the H2O because if I spill my coffee or my water on it, you know, it's a simple matter of wiping it off and we're good to go.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to come back on the box set thing, because as you mentioned, this is something I've just done this week, is a 7-book box set of my existing Arcane series. And I've got book 8 coming out, and at the end of the 7 books, it has a link to the pre-order. When this goes out, it might be available. But the aim of that was because on Kobo, my box sets sell better than my individual books, which is super exciting. So I wonder, just to explain for other people, you can do higher prices than $9.99 on Kobo, which means that you still get the higher royalty rate, which you can't do on Amazon. You can also do it on iBooks, but you can't do it on Amazon. So I won't even sell that box set on Amazon at the moment. It's only on Kobo because I know Kobo readers will pay for that. So what are you seeing around box sets, and why should authors give it a go? Because a lot of people can't see the market for it, or they think it's about discounting.
The box set is a great value for the consumer because you can get 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 books from the author without it costing as much. So it is a good value, but it doesn't have to be a giveaway for the author. When we wanted to remove the cap, so it actually stemmed back to, I approached Michael Tamblyn and said, we had $1.99 to $12.99, and industry stats were showing that $1.99 was a really bad price point. And I said, listen, I don't want to encourage people. We can afford to give them 70%. But I don't want to encourage them to price their book at that price, because they'll be twice as likely to sell it at 99 cents and 4 times as likely at $2.99. I want to walk that up, but I'd like to walk up $12.99 to $15.99. And he said, why do we have a cap in the first place? And the answer was, well, because that's kind of what Amazon did, and we just wanted to be better than Amazon. And he said, well, why don't you just remove the cap? So it was his brilliant idea to just remove the cap, and that opened up a whole new opportunity for writers, because some readers are used to binge watching, right? Mm. They watch a whole season of something on Netflix, and so they want to binge read. They want to get all 7 books. They don't want to have to go back and pick them up. They want to just say, listen, I'm going to read the entire Arcane series. I want them all now. Give them to me, please. I can take them on vacation. I don't have to worry about Wi-Fi. I've got them all loaded and they're good to go. And I get a good value. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was Lauren Royal was the first independent author. She's a historical romance author who did a box set that was $19.99. And by far, she surpassed everyone that month. She was knocking it out of the park. And the beautiful thing was she was making almost $20 for every unit sale, not 30 cents. Or whatever the thing is that you normally make when you get a huge volume of unit sales. So it has been a really, really good experience for our authors.
And I think the other thing is, you know, a lot of us now doing Facebook advertising. And when you do Facebook advertising to a box set, it's pretty much the only way you can get positive ROI on an advert. So what, and I'm only 3 days into this so far because I only put up the box set this week, the 7-book box set. I had three-book box sets, but this is the first 7-book. We've started advertising, and so far we've had a positive ROI. So we're making money on the books. The books are kind of doubling the price of the ad. So that makes it really worthwhile. I'm only doing it in Canada at the moment, and we're just testing it out, and then we're going to roll it further. So when you have a higher price box set, I think that one's $14.99 or something, but you know, it's a big, you know, a big buy. So you get really good return on your money. So anyway, that's what I'm looking at. And by the time this goes out as an interview, I'll be able to update in the introduction, you know, what was going on with that. But I think that's a good reason. I did want to ask you, because it's interesting, the 3D effect covers for box sets versus the flat cover. Kobo has a view on this.
Yeah, and the 3D covers are sexy. I like them as an author. I think they look neat, especially if you're a digital-only author. This is your chance to see the book, how it would look if it were a hardcover. But the reality is our merchandisers who control the show, our merchandisers and our customers in many ways, so long as the cover, they like the flat, the 2D cover, so long as the book shows the value of the multiple books. And I think the covers that you've done for the Arcane and the London Psychic are very clear. We know we're getting value. We know we're getting more than one book, and you can see very clearly what you're getting in that. So long as that value is clear, customers are fine with it. And it also displays better. You can actually see more of it because you're using all of that real estate, because that's how the promos and emails are built. They're built using that, you know, that rectangular real estate. So that really enhances that thumbnail to be a lot more visible to the consumer, and it's less confusing. So we found that helps increase sales, and that's why when we're running promos, we have a strong, strong preference to include 2D covers rather than 3D covers.
Yeah, and of course, iBooks, you can't use 3D covers. So there's got to be something there that's, you know, if two major sellers are saying we prefer flat covers, that's got to, you know, it's got to prove something.
There's got to be a reason there somewhere, some hidden reason that maybe they sell better or something.
Yeah, exactly. I've actually swapped one out on Amazon. Is the trouble is you can't split test. I mean, you can see your data, but one can't split test on one's own books. But I have now put one of my box sets as flat on Amazon, because I think people have used the multi-author box set, you know, as I did with other authors to get on the New York Times list, the multi-author box set for 99 cents, you know, 12 book 99 cents. That's what people is in authors' heads. But as you've said, in readers' heads, they see a single author box set as more like a value and a binge read. So I want all people listening to completely disconnect the cheap multi-author box set with the mega value box set. So let's come on to merchandising, because of course that's the other reason, because Kobo merchandisers obviously make money on selling books, and they prefer to give the reader a good deal and make money. So they're more likely to pick up a $14.99 reduced to say $8.99 than they are a $2.99 reduced to 99 cents. Would that be right? How do the merchandisers see these things?
For sure. We want to show value. So think about the way BookBub approaches. The bigger the discount, the bigger the deal. We can share that this is 80% off, not 50% off. And again, 80% off of $2.99 to 99 cents is nowhere near as exciting as, you know, a box that was, you know, north of $15 or close to $20 coming down to $2.99. Now think about it from this perspective as well. That drop from $14.99 or $18.99 down to $2.99 does two things. It's a huge value for the consumer, but it's also still giving you 70% at the low end. So, I mean, it keeps more money in your pocket, and it gives a very visually representative a drop. Now, we do show the price changes on the daily deals page. We actually have a new deals page that shows all the deals. But it also is something that we have done some A/B testing with, and we show that when someone just changes their price, showing that price change really does increase the consumer's willingness to click that buy button. So we'll be doing more of that. So even if an author isn't in a promo, if they're doing a temporary price drop for whatever reason, we'll be showing that because we want to show the consumer the value. And of course, there's something about the urgency of Daily Deal saying this is only available for a limited time at this great price.
Absolutely. So one of the other stats I saw is that Writing Life self-published titles account for 15% of all the books Kobo sells. Of course, many authors still choose KDP Select and exclusivity. And of course, I bang on about not doing that. Some people say that they do that because they didn't get any traction at Kobo or iBooks and will forget about Nook for now. So what are some of your other tips for helping people sell more books on Kobo?
I know this is going to sound very self-serving, but it's the reality. And I think I'm honest with authors about what's good and what's not so good. The big sellers, the people who are doing really, really well on Kobo, tend to be the people who don't dip in and out. And I'll tell you why. It does a couple things. We have a thing called temperature, which affects the ranking, which affects the also bots and all of the algorithms that feed our system. And titles, it does take longer at Kobo. It takes 6 to 9 months to get any traction on Kobo. It's not an easy game, nor is writing, nor is publishing. So it's very much a realistic marketplace. But once you get traction, it slowly builds, and it slowly builds over time. So authors who keep dipping in and out are not making it any easier for themselves, because every time they come back after their 3-month tour of duty with KDP Select, they have to start from scratch. Their temperature goes right back down to zero. So every time they do that, they're not getting any traction. The other thing I think, and I'm seeing more of this over time, because we have our people who pay attention to our core readers and our core and issues that they have. And it gets brought to my attention that an author or a reader was reading books from an author, and then they found out that the author had a new book, and that new book's not available on Kobo. Oh no, sorry, you have to wait. You know, we reach out to the author and find out they're in KDP Select, so we have to apologize to the consumer who blames us. And to say, oh, sorry, that book will be available in 90 days because the author is participating in a something with another retailer. So that's really frustrating, because that customer who wanted to buy your book may not wait around 90 days for you, isn't going to go buy it on Kindle. They're buying stuff from Kobo religiously. So they're just going to move on to another author, and then it hurts you even more. So it's this self-fulfilling prophecy. That is, I just see it as negative a spiral for indie authors as being a mid-list author in traditional publishing has been over time, right? It's just a negative spiral that keeps going down and down and down and down and down. I think the authors who do really, really well also include Kobo in their promos, not feature it, but include. So when they share information, they share all platforms, and that gives their readers an opportunity to buy it on whatever platform they're already on. And that's a key ingredient. It's a small thing that people do, but the authors who are successful do it.
So that would include, for example, doing an email to your list about your new book, and you would include all the retailer links as opposed to just the Amazon link. That, exactly. Or on your website, including the links to your Kobo link as well as your Amazon and other links.
Yeah, all the links to all the retailers so that the consumer goes and gets it wherever they are privy to.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with that. And I'd also agree about the time. You know, these things do take time to grow. And, you know, I do often say to authors, you know, if you're still new, like if you've only got one or two books, then fair enough. You're just getting started, and maybe exclusivity is a way to go. But once you're taking this seriously as a career, you know, going wide and going on multiple platforms is the best way to protect your multiple streams of income, right? Because you never know. And, you know, I'm very happy with my Kobo sales, but it took a while, right? I've been on since day one, I think. Like,
You have been.
2012,
yeah.
But probably my sales were about $3 in the first month. But so they were on Amazon at the beginning, you know. So I think that's important. As you say, it's a long-term game.
Well, imagine you were an author who made the majority of your income from Nook in the UK. What would you do right now?
Yeah, you're pretty...
Thank God you have Kindle and Kobo and iBooks.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to just also ask you about pre-orders, because at the moment it's so funny. I just had someone email me because I have a pre-order on Destroyer of Worlds, and I have done for months on Kobo, iBooks, and through Drafter Digital on Nook and other platforms, but not on Amazon, because on pre-orders on Amazon seem to be a pain in the neck in terms of ranking, but also, you know, they have a 90-day thing, blah, blah, blah. And so you guys have a much more open pre-order thing. So what are your recommendations with pre-orders, and how do they make a difference?
Well, I think pre-orders build your catalog earlier. And so if a customer has finished one of your books, and whether it's in a series or whether it's standalone, if they finished one of your books, they want to see what else you have. So that gives them an opportunity to commit to buy now, give your credit card, and then when the book is available, we'll give it to you. And hey, when you have their eyeballs, to a credit card and get the sale from them, right? You don't want it just to be eyeballs. So that's an important factor. The other thing, it's kind of part of the SEO. Sometimes people, when they want, if you only have one book out and the other book's going to be available in 6 months pre-order, that just shows that you'll be around to entertain that reader. I know agents, it used to be a thing when you were pitching to an agent in traditional publishing, was the agent's not just interested in the book you're pitching. They may ask you what your next book is going to be, and you better have an answer for them, because they want to build a career, not a book. Mm. And that kind of is what readers are doing in many ways, is, well, do I want to read this author, or do I want to discover a whole new world that they're going to bring me into? And that's part of it. So it helps in that aspect. And I have to apologize, because we allowed pre-orders, but we didn't have the mechanism to show you your pre-orders, because we don't – the dashboard currently only shows sales – after we take in the money. And so two things we're going to be fixing in our dashboard in the next few months is actually giving you the ability to show pre-orders. Believe it or not, the UX, the user experience for that is a lot more complicated than it would seem, because when it moves from pre-order to sale, where do we show it? How do we show it? Do we have a map with a toggle that only shows pre-orders? And so it's a lot more complicated. And then, of course, the free as well. The free tracking has been broken. The objects in Mirror are larger than they appear currently. And so chances are, if you're seeing 50 free downloads, you really have 100 free downloads because of the way that the different systems that they're pointing at. So there's a few enhancements coming in the dashboard that will allow you to see free and to see pre-orders in the same rich way you can see sales, with a few more options. So that's sort of an apology to existing Kobo Writing Life users and a promise of what's coming in terms of making your visibility on your pre-orders a lot more prominent.
Mm. So what is the benefit of using Kobo Writing Life over a distributor like Smashwords or Drafter Digital?
Well, I think one of the big ones, and this goes more probably for Smashwords than Drafter Digital, is global pricing. You really, to leverage Kobo, you can't just stick in a U.S. price and roll the dice and see what happens. You really have to look at the global market. You really have to specify your global prices. Most of our authors, 50% of their sales are Canada. So why aren't you optimizing your price in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, walking the price up a dollar or even two ton, because the exchange rate is scary, but walking it down in pounds and walking it down in rupees, which very shortly, probably by the time this podcast airs, that will finally, that was another UX nightmare. We had 8 currencies you can control, and we're moving to 17 currencies. So the challenge there is how do we show it to people without overwhelming them? Mm. How do we give them the ability? And I think Drafted Digital did a really good job of this. They had the pop-up window. And so with ours, it's not just the pricing, but then how in the promotional pricing, where you can set your price in advance and forget about it, that you set it, walk away, come back after your book club and not have to sit there at midnight and press your prices. So functionality like that is helping authors. And then, of course, the promotions tab. We have a promotions tab available for Kobo Writing Life authors, which is still in its early, and I call it the beta phases, because there's still a couple bugs to work out. So users who are in it, we usually open it up if we know the user is going to be patient and or will provide us feedback that helps us make it better.
Yeah, and that has been fantastic, because previously, you know, there was a lot more manual work on your end as well to try and sift out things to promote. But now, you know, those people, and eventually I'm sure it will be everyone, gets access and you can submit your own books. So that will help you guys, because you don't have to kind of manually sift through everything. And also, yeah. I found it really easy to use to schedule these various promotions. So that's been really cool. Wanted to ask you about, you also have this author services tab, which includes print on demand. And there's been a survey about print on demand. What's happening with that? You know, are you looking at competing against CreateSpace, and in what markets, for example?
Well, I don't see Kobo Writing Life competing with CreateSpace. What we're really doing is we're offering yet another option for authors. It's kind of author services was born out of, just like the promotions tab was born out of, the biggest question we got from authors was, what will you do to promote my book? And the biggest challenge we had was how to manage those requests, and how to, because we have 1,000 requests for 100 spots. How do we manage it in order to give our customers the best possible books, but give authors more opportunity than before? So I call the promotions tab BookBub, built right into Kobo Writing Life. With the author services, there's so many authors who ask for print on demand, or ask for, can you recommend an editor, or where can I buy an ISBN, or where can I get audiobooks, all of these things. And so over time, we have met and encountered so many amazing people who offer services. The challenge is how to properly move people over. And the biggest challenge I have is 90% of the industry are sharks who are preying on the hopes and dreams of writers. And so our desire is to help steer new writers who don't know what they're doing and don't listen to this amazing podcast and other resources that are available, but most writers don't. So how do we steer them towards trusted services? And I'll give you an example. ISBNs. You don't need an ISBN. Nobody needs an ISBN. But there are some authors who really, really want a print book and therefore want an ISBN, or want to have an ISBN. Mm. So, you know, for those authors who want it, it's there. And we make it easier so that they don't have to go wandering and maybe fall into some rabbit holes and maybe spend way too much money that they don't have to. In terms of print on demand, to come back to that, and the reason why we're looking at it in such detail is, the biggest challenge with CreateSpace, which is a fantastic service, I use it as an author myself, but I also use Lightning Source directly. And I know, having been a bookseller for over 20 years, that 98% of booksellers will never order a book from Amazon. Mm. Not because it's not returnable, but the terms are horrible. It's a bad experience, and you're stuck with the book. With Lightning Source, you can set up, for example, the ability to make it returnable, which costs you a lot of money, which is, publishers eat that cost all the time, which makes it more likely for bookstores to carry your book. So having used other print-on-demand services as an author, traveling, calling 3 months in advance, and this was even with Barnes & Noble years and years ago, because remember, I was in print on demand in 2004, back in the really archaic or ancient days of digital. I would call Barnes & Noble and say, I'm going to be in town. I'd love to do a signing. They look in the system. They see it's available and it's returnable. So they're less likely to say, no, we have no idea who you are. No. And they did it. So giving more options to authors is really what it's all about. So that's something that we're really intrigued with.
Just so people listening, Lightning Source now, people go through Ingram Spark. So, you know, Mark's old school, but they have changed it now. So other things I wanted to ask you about, we're running out of time, but, you know, I have these other questions. First of all, in March 2015, Kobo acquired Overdrive. Can you explain what that means to authors and readers, hopefully this year?
Yeah, of course. For sure. So Overdrive basically powers audiobooks and print books to, or print digital books to libraries, primarily in North America. They have a huge presence, but they are growing globally. And this is a great way to get into libraries. Now, I know indie authors already had ways into libraries, but unfortunately, in the past, all it really was they took a whole bunch of self-published titles and they dumped them into the library system, and they ended up in a ghetto, a self-published ghetto. So from the time that we started to work with our colleagues at Overdrive, we've been providing them curated lists of what are not only the best-selling titles from Kobo Writing Life, what are the best-selling titles in each category, because librarians have very specific desires and requests that their sales team use, but then also, what are the best read? Because that's another thing we do, is this book may not have sold thousands of copies, but all 10 people who bought it read this book cover to cover in the first day they picked it up and opened it. They couldn't put it down. Therefore, you may want to pay attention to these titles. And then the other thing librarians are very interested in is local authors. So promoting and supporting authors who are local. So working with the publisher acquisition team at Overdrive, we're in the process of developing and testing. We are currently testing, providing them files so authors can easily opt into Overdrive and control their books and allow, you know, I want this one in, I don't want that one in. And we're really excited and looking forward to making that a possibility. So it's yet another way that authors can say, yep, I'd like to be in the library system. Please help me.
Fantastic. So that's, again, something that's on the cards for 2016.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's something that we're very, very heavily engaged with the development team right now. And I'm working really closely with my colleagues in Cleveland, which is where their head office is located.
Yeah. And I think all these things are really important. You know, as we talked about at the beginning with Nook pulling back, I think it's really important that you guys are continuing to push things out and not just sit on what you've got, but just keep on pushing it. So the other thing that was interesting is December 2015, Flipkart India closed their ebook store and handed their customers over to Kobo, which is brilliant. And especially given, and again, coming back to Nook, Nook UK handed their customers to Sainsbury's, which, if people don't know about Britain, Sainsbury's is a supermarket. They sell, you know, groceries. It is not a bookstore. So I don't know how that happened. But anyway, let's go back to India. Tell us about, do you know why that happened? Are you excited about India? How can authors kind of take advantage of that?
So, I mean, the partnership with Flipkart is not all that different than the partnership we have with retailers globally. Flipkart wanted to focus on print, and therefore our focus on ebooks worked really, really well, so that the customers who had ebooks on Flipkart would not be disappointed and can still return to their libraries and still enjoy probably even a better e-reading experience than they had previously. But then that also opens up yet another market within India, which we know is a growing market, is continuing to grow. And so I think just in the launch of the global pricing tools, which we've been working on for a while and had to keep going back to the user experience and how not to confuse it, is rupees is going to be huge, and rand and rial, and they all start with R, apparently, all the new currencies. But these are in glowing global markets in Brazil and in South Africa and obviously in India. So, and in India, you really, really, really need to price low, because books are so cheap. Print books are so cheap in India. You need to be bargain basement price in India. More so than in the UK, where big publishers are pricing low. So, and it's funny, I've got a gentleman that recently interviewed me for his podcast for India, Authors from India, is he's writing an article for us from the perspective of consumers in India and what are the best prices in different territories. And we'll be publishing that to coincide with the new tools, so we can say, okay, here are your tools. Mm-hmm. But we've only ever really offered sort of English market pricing advice. How are we going to help authors with their global pricing? So great, we've got India now. Here's some ideas and strategies for you in India. And then we're going to be doing that in other territories as well. Because again, if we don't help authors, if we don't help educate them on how to exploit the global market and get new customers, if we don't help them, we're not helping ourselves.
I actually think it's one of the things that, I mean, an iBooks is very clunky to go direct to, but they do have this tier function so that you can see if you put in a price, it will say, well, this is actually tier 12 in this country. Like when I price in euros, for example, euros is in a lot of different countries, and the tier, it'll say, well, in Lithuania, you've just priced at 299 euros, but that tier is like tier 8. I'm just making this up. But, you know, whereas in Switzerland, it might only be a tier 5. So you actually get that idea of the pricing for the 51 different currencies that they use,
which can be overwhelming, right?
It is overwhelming, definitely. And I think that this is why many authors go, I don't want to think about that, because many authors haven't necessarily traveled as much as you and I have. You know, I've been to India several times, and you can get print books for 150 rupees. And, you know, at the moment, most authors' ebooks are going to be around, you know, 300 to 600 rupees. No one's going to buy those. So,
exactly.
Yeah. But I think going with the discounted price, people have to remember that India is going to be about volume. All of this is about volume at the end of the day. So I think that's super important. It's also going to be important. Like I've had emails from readers in Africa who use Kobo, shop on Kobo because of the DRM free stuff. And again, they are buying indie books because the exchange rate means that they can't necessarily afford traditionally published books. And yet you know, and I know you're not bringing out prices, you know, for like Nigeria and Zambia and stuff, but you know, that fast forward 4 years, 5 years, it may be that you do have that going on, as you know, as we know, as the internet rolls out and everything. But that's, I think that's super exciting.
So part of me wants to just stop talking about global pricing, because there are going to be authors like you and me and a very small select group of authors that pay attention to this that will be at the forefront of the boom. And part of me wants to say, yeah, okay, just stick in your US price and go away.
Go away.
But I can't, because I see such potential there, and I can't shut up about it. Because like you, I'm very, very passionate about how different countries around the world are discovering ebooks for the first time, and that demographic, the 3-digit percent that we used to see in North America and in the UK years ago, we're now starting to see that growth in other territories. So I think it really does make sense, especially since most, you know, the complaint I get is, well, you know, 80% of my sales or 90% of my sales are Kindle. Yeah, but they're probably also in the US and in the UK. What percentage of your sales in different countries are Kobo, are iBooks, are the other platforms? And start paying attention not just to unit sales, but to the money that you're actually making. Because when you actually look at it in detail, sometimes that, units are all exciting and everything, but it doesn't put food on your table. It doesn't ensure that you can quit your day job and actually live on your writing. And those are things that you can properly exploit in the global market. You know, and like you said, in India, it's a volume game. Definitely. You're not going to sell anything at the high prices. At least you're going to make some income from India, and based on the population of English-speaking readers in that country, it could be twice what your US sales are if you play your cards right.
Exactly. And again, it doesn't cost you anything to just, you don't even have to check any extra boxes. You know, it'll happen automatically. But and of course, you know, I'm always going on about my Kobo map and having sold books in 74 of your 190 territories. One of my goals, of course, is to sell a book in 190 countries. I'm going to have to work on that. We'll have to work on that together.
We should work on that together. Yes, exactly.
We should. You know, like some people like travel to all these places. I just want to sell books there. But it's, you know, as I think, again, Michael Tamblyn said, the sales of ebooks are between 20 and 30% of the market. So sure, that leaves 70 to 80% of print. But if you think that the percentage sales of digital in Brazil and India and Nigeria, big growing economies, are 0.0001% right now, what is it going to look like when they're 20 to 30% in every single country? And, you know, I think the problem that people have is that they can't imagine that other countries are like their country. they think people are different.
People are people.
Yeah, exactly. No. People are people. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. I don't think it's going to be any different. It's just that, yes, sure, it's very difficult when you look at, you know, your earnings and you've made $3. But you have to think further ahead, right? You know, was Kobo even happening 5 years ago?
Were we alive? We were known as short covers back then, I think, potentially. I have to go look at a map because I've been with Kobo since 2011. I think Kobo was 2 at the time. I can't do math in my head very quickly.
But
were either just starting.
Yeah, exactly. Just starting. And then if you go back 10 years ago, you know, there was none of this. So I think that keeping that longer term perspective, we always harp on about it, but people love us harping on about it.
They do. We sound like old people saying in my day. No, but I mean, I self-published my first book more than 10 years ago, back when all of my writer friends said, do not self-publish. It's the best way to kill your career. And for me, it actually helped grow my career. So that was just, and that was, you know, like, well, Sonny, that was back in the old days, 2004. So it was one of those, like, that's 12 years ago now, but so much has changed in that time. And so many new opportunities have grown. There's going to be more opportunities if we keep our eyes on them.
Yeah. And just one final thing on this, if people have sold their rights to a publisher, the important thing is, have you only sold rights in the US or Canada or the UK? Because when you publish on Kobo and the other platforms, you can choose to opt out of markets. So you So this is the thing. So maybe you have sold your rights in Canada, but you can still self-publish in every other territory. And I think that's, people have to remember that. It's, you know, don't sell world English. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and we haven't even got time to talk about translation, but we'll have you back on the show, Mark.
It's always a pleasure, Joanna.
It is. So tell us, where can people find Kobo Writing Life? And of course, where can they find you as an author online?
So it's kobo.com/writinglife, or I prefer to send people to kobowritinglife.com because we do have articles about craft and business of writing, at Kobo Writing Life on Twitter, and you can email writinglife@kobo.com. So for example, those who are interested in the promotions tab, email us at writinglife@kobo.com. We will actually look at your books. And if we think you're ready to help us test this out, we'll be honest with you and we'll say, you know, maybe not. That might be some constructive criticism to say, well, we're probably going to reject your title because the covers aren't that good or something like that. And it's hard to be really diplomatic and nice, but to say, listen, it's not going to be a good experience for either one of us, so we're not going to do this. And I'm at Mark Leslie on Twitter, and marklesley.ca is my author website.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.